Memphis Depay, forward and occasional rapper, played for PSV, Manchester United and now Lyon, won the Eredivisie, the Dutch Cup and the Johan Cruyff Shield, 54 appearances for the Netherlands, finished third at the 2014 World Cup. Did I mention he was a rapper and, of course, author? But let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
It really feels as if they've done like a biography of a great historical figure instead of what this is, which is a very horny 24-year-old.
You think you can understand Memphis, but you never shall. You never understand Memphis.
I never thought I'd read a book that went from A Child Called It to Patrick Bateman to Kim Kardashian, but I did, and I loved it.
Are you in trouble? Homie, you betcha. I'll take a mother down like Darren Fletcher. Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another footballer's autobiography. Less Dick King Smith, more Dixon Atuhu. I'm James Berg, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Darren Anderton's Take Note and Jamie Lawrence's From Prison to the Premiership, but today we're reading Memphis Depay's 2019 book Heart of a Lion, and reading it with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And welcome to the show, journalist, broadcaster, and The Athletic's Manchester United correspondent, Carl Anka.
Ahoy, hoy.
That was a terrible clap.
Three claps for Carl. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I greatly enjoyed reading this book.
That's good to hear. Thank you very much for coming on. Are you a fan of football books and all Memphis Depay?
Memphis Depay, absolutely. He's a fascinating young man before I even read this book. And our football books, well, I read quite a few of them. They're just books to me because of work, isn't it?
True.
Well, yeah, that's a sad thing because this is meant to be kind of fun, but this effectively just turned into homework for you, Carl, right?
There was a point, so I'd finished my last book and I had started reading, I was like 20 pages into reading Ham on Rye in my living room. And I went, oh God, I'm meant to be reading a football book.
Sorry. Slammed it shut.
Put it down and grab Memphis Depay, which is fine because I've read too much Bukowski anyway. So, and this is just generally just more uplifting than Henry.
That is true. That is true. I'm not sure. Is it as good in terms of literary value? Would you say?
Similar sentence structure.
You know. Yeah. I would agree. Yeah. So, Carl, you're the Manchester United correspondent at The Athletic. Previously, you worked reporting on Southampton before that. How did it feel when The Athletic told you you were being demoted?
Oh, man. I was just like, oh, I should buy a bigger coat because of the rain, right?
Right.
And no, it didn't. It doesn't rain that much in Manchester. And then I got to Manchester and I went, oh, it's serious rain up here. Why is this happening?
Live in Manchester now then?
Yeah. I moved to Southampton and moved to Manchester to cover Manchester United.
Is there any place you really don't want to move to that you're hoping they never get promoted or you just
Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah.
Wow. It's this kind of podcast, huh?
No.
I'm allowed to say that.
Let's move on. We're losing it. But how's it been so far? It's an unusual first season to kind of come into with it all. What are your thoughts on Man United this season? In probably the most open Premier League we're going to have in a long time.
This is really well, it's really weird because it's like we're doing the World Cup hangover where everyone is knackered and broken.
Yeah.
But we're doing it before an international tournament.
That's true.
And it's really interesting that not only are we talking about squad rotation in terms of football players, but we're also doing it in terms of the sports journalists. So I'm in like a job share with the other Manchester United correspondent, Laurie Whitwell. Hi, Laurie. And we are like every month we're looking at the calendar going, right, you can take these games and I'll take these games because that way we don't get burnout and we're like a nice little strike partnership.
Jeez.
And I'll drop deep when you go forward.
Okay.
Does he ever take over halfway through a game and you're like, oh, I can't believe I'm substituted. I was doing so well.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah,
really?
There was during the 6-1 defeat to Spurs, there was a point in time where, okay, cool. So this is what we're going to probably write about and bing, bang, 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 boom. And then it gets to 3-1, and it gets to 4-1, then it gets to 5-1, and you feel like the arm on your shoulder is like... Come on. Tactical rotation. Tagging out.
You can't see my grin on the podcast, sadly, but the more times you mention the Spurs girls, the better for me. Imagine what it's going to be like next season after the Euros have happened.
Yes, you think the Euros are going to happen. That's cute.
Yeah. Wow, I haven't been called cute on this podcast yet. I'm fuming. Okay, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and of course, Ken's on. Will you bring us a chant? But first, the book itself, it's a bit of an unusual one this week. It's kind of part documentary, part autobiography, the way the book works. It kind of follows him traveling around, and then it goes into his life and talks a bit about football sometimes. But and obviously, it's a bit different as well because he's still playing, whereas usually we do books that came out, you know, 30-odd years ago. Whereas Memphis is, he's only... I think he was 24 when he wrote the book. He's now 26 or so.
Yep.
Very young. Here's what the blurb says. Everyone has an opinion on Memphis Depay, but few are familiar with his intense and... people are shaking their heads. Does no one, none of you have an opinion on Memphis Depay?
I kind of forgot Memphis Depay exists after a while. I was like, oh yeah, I know Memphis Depay. Yeah, sort of.
I kind of knew him from Instagram more than football.
But to be fair, he has Instagram game.
He does.
And when he got Instagram, 5 million followers on Instagram... he celebrated by going to the Eiffel Tower and smoking a cigar in like a rap video. So he's an Instagrammer almost as much as he is a footballer at this point, I would say.
I'm not sure what Lyon fans would say about that, but okay. Now the time has come for him to tell that story in his own words. His breakthrough at PSV, the fiasco. Yeah, actually, that's not true either. Carl shook his head there, I saw, because it's someone else's words, right?
Yeah, it's not an autobiography. It's a biography that rapidly switches tenses and genre and format.
Okay, yeah. That is the thing that is the most frustrating about this book, is that it will suddenly jump to the first person, the third person, like the second person, and like we're in the future, we're in the past, we're in the... it's like...
yeah.
So I haven't seen Tenet, but I imagine it's what watching Tenet is like.
I saw it last night and it's exactly the same.
Is it?
Yeah. Memphis Depay is in the main role, and then sorry, Tash, what are you saying?
No, I was saying the first two pages, he spends the entire time talking about how he's always wanted to write a book. And then I reckon he wrote 6 pages in it.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is, who's the other guy? Simon Zwartkruis.
Yeah, he's a Dutch journalist who basically chronicles everything. But like I said, in his voice, in Simon's voice, not in Memphis's voice.
Not in Memphis. It's not because obviously we have lots of, you know, ghost written books on the show. But it's not here's my story. Here's Memphis's story, and occasionally he'll talk for 3 pages, and then his mum will talk, and then his friend will talk, and then his like life coach will talk.
I do feel like Memphis did a sort of control F and found every time it said he, and he put his own name back in, because every sentence is like Memphis did this, and then Memphis did that, and then Memphis did this, and
he's so very good at branding. Very good at branding.
Yeah, very good.
He's,
that name is,
because otherwise, halfway through the book, you might suddenly be like, "Who am I reading about? Is it Gary Monk?" No, no, it's Memphis Depay. I remember now.
Also, we're only halfway through the blurb, and we've already got this. I only started the book. So his own words, his breakthrough at PSV, the fiasco in Manchester, his revival in Lyon and the Dutch national team, the unending commotion about his appearance and image, his musical ambitions, yes please, his small circle of trusted confidants and his relationship with God. It's all here in this vulnerable yet powerful and inspiring biography.
He said that like a regional DJ, that last bit. His relationship with God. Now, coming up later, it's Chumbawamba.
Here's Sue with the traffic. I mean, that makes you want to read it, right? Made me want to read it when I first saw it.
I was very confused reading the blurb, right? So this is the constant thing about this book and Memphis Depay, the footballing entity. I won't even say the person, because I've read this book now. I've gone through it a couple of times. I've even given this to a friend to be like, can you just like, I've sent you a screenshot here, and are you also confused? I, you know, I've also sent it to someone who grew up, you know, is from the Netherlands, being like, please confirm this thing happens in the Netherlands.
Okay.
And they're also very confused, because the thing is, Memphis... very, very, very... it's very clear from this book that Memphis desperately wants to be an intellectual. He considers himself as an intellectual or someone really, really important. And there are loads of segments in this thing about how Memphis had a difficult, hard, unorthodox childhood, which is true to some degree. He's had a really weird, dysfunctional childhood.
Definitely.
But the way he writes it is he's the only one that's ever had that. And there are loads of bits... where they're discussing, there's one segment and it goes, this is the thing about Memphis, where the more you get to know him, the more likely he is to rebel against you. As if he's some sort of mythical...
yeah. You think you can understand Memphis, but you never shall. You never understand Memphis.
It really feels as if they've done like a documentary biography of a great historical figure instead of what this is, which is a very horny, very miscreant 24-year-old.
Right. that's a pretty good description of Memphis Depay. Sadly, that's not on the front cover of the book, but I think it should be. Carl
horny
Anka,
miscreant.
Memphis is horny. I think when I sent you the book that we were going to do it, Carl, you wrote back to me in capitals, Memphis has a book, I think was what you said. So I think you're as surprised as anyone that Memphis has written one, let alone what's inside it.
He's so young, right? He's so young. And he's like, there is an interesting flow here. And speaking as someone who has been in contact with footballers about potentially writing autobiographies, I just don't understand why Memphis needs an entire book rather than 3,000 words.
Yeah, or an Instagram post. An Instagram post would have done most of this.
Why? Like he earnestly quotes himself. This book is so unintentionally funny because he wants to be an intellectual and he wants to be important. But there's so many bits that you can half imagine being said in a Judd Apatow film, and it's like there's so many lines in this book where you can imagine like Memphis is saying those lines to Paul Rudd, and Paul Rudd is just nodding his head.
And later on, he'll like whisper to a friend, "This guy's insane. This guy's crazy.
He's got a Jigglypuff tattoo.
Oh, it's so weird.
No, man, he's an intellectual.
Weird.
You'll never understand. He's got a Jigglypuff tattoo. He's got an Aku tattoo.
But I don't want to be mean because also he's very sweet.
There's a lot of sweetness to this book. There's a huge amount of sweetness in this book.
I mean, let's see what the reviewers are saying on Amazon. The book has 4.6 stars from 20 reviews, including this 5-star review from Lumen titled "Raw, Powerful, Gripping." And strap in, this is a long one. You follow the journey of a human being, name Memphis. He just wants to be. Through hardships, a mother's love, friendships, romantic love, football, bracket soccer for US citizens, winky face, from which you get behind the scenes, so cool, close brackets, and of course his walk with Christ. It's a roller coaster ride from bliss to chaos, then bliss again, then chaos again, and so on until peace. And what is peace, you may ask? It's a gift from the Lord. Go grab that book, guys. Four people found that review helpful. Okay, let's go straight into the book.
Yeah.
No foreword, which is very, very sad. Instead, we have a whole segment where Memphis goes to Ghana on a kind of road trip. He's going there for a noble cause. He's going there to look after blind and deaf children.
Speaking of, as the Ghanaian on the podcast.
Yeah.
So Memphis goes to Elmina Castle, which is a historical monument in Ghana, just outside the capital, where it's basically where a large chunk of the transatlantic slave trade happened.
Yes.
So I visited there when I went to Ghana. Mm-hmm. And it's really powerful. There's like you're allowed to go into one of the cells, and there's like a little door, and they say it's the doorway of no return. And they're very much, you know, over 400 years, thousands and thousands and thousands of people were crammed in this room, went out that door, and then they were just put on ships and taken away.
Yeah.
And it's really moving. And the entire time they're in Ghana is really, really interesting because Memphis, and I think Memphis has been quite vocal about his mixed heritage. He has spoken to football journalists about how he'd prefer if you just call him Memphis rather than Memphis Depay because of the estranged relationship he has with his father, who is Ghanaian. So not only is this trip really interesting because he's going for charitable reasons, but he's also going to get in touch with basically his Ghanaianness. And he can't quite do that because he doesn't really know his dad, and he can't really go to his grandfather's house, and he can't really go to his uncle's house. So what he's done is basically going to like one of the most horrific historical monuments in Ghana, and he just sits there and he's just trying to absorb it all. And it should be a really deep moment, but this is the thing about so many things about this book, where there are so many moments that should be really serious, but they can't, because Memphis himself is a very strange person who doesn't really have self-awareness.
Yeah.
So you'll have this bit where he'll like be in a really, really deep moment. So he will sit in the room where hundreds of slaves were taken away. And then the book will go, and then his best friend, the rapper so-and-so, talks to him. And it's not his fault, but it's just that concept of Memphis is gone, and one of like the most important, more or less like spirit guides of his life. And he stood next to a rapper named after a dog, I think. And, and you're just like, oh, you're really sweet and you're really just trying to find your way in the world.
But yeah.
Also, you are very cartoonish.
Yeah. Oh.
I thought that about the last line in that chapter is where he says something about he goes to a field and there's a rickety goal. And he scored a goal in it, but he can't help but mention that he's wearing custom trainers.
Yes, yes, all the time.
Yeah, and it's like, mate, come on.
He is obsessed with material possessions, but I do agree.
But he's not, and that's the really interesting thing. I don't, the book makes you constantly go,
Maybe it's Simon, is that his name? The guy, right? Maybe he doesn't do him justice in some ways because...
Simon does no offense to Simon, calling him out here though, he does a terrible job throughout this book because it should really be like a much better like constructed book. I feel like there is, I think as Carl says, there's a much more interesting book in here, but like just the way it's been created just falls apart.
Yeah, I wonder how quickly this book had to be turned around.
That's fair.
And
that is fair. It didn't have to be turned around for about 20 years. They could just wait till Memphis had finished his career. That'd probably be the best thing to do.
Because they also say quite a lot in the book. Like, I know you're thinking it's quite an early time to do it. My publicist told me this is too early. My friends have told me this is too early.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it now. And then
take a hint, Memphis.
Yeah. If so many people are telling you it's too early, it might be too early.
This is the thing with Memphis. Like, the more you tell him no, the more he does it.
The more he wants to do it.
And it's just like, are you 12?
He does think he is Jesus, though. He does think he's Jesus. Or at least Simon makes it. I mean, like, he wants to be baptized in the River Jordan like Jesus himself. He's kind of going on this whole spiritual trip to see everything. He describes a baptism as lit at one point. No one has ever described a baptism as lit. My baptism...
You've not been to the right baptism. Yeah. You've not been to the right ones.
Come to church with me.
Carl, if you want to re-baptize me somewhere in Manchester, I'm all down for it. But my baptism, I know for a fact, was dull for everyone involved.
I think he wants to be important. And I think the more you get into the book, the more you get into the sadder sections, it's very clear that he had a really turbulent childhood. And he has got a really close relationship with his mother, Cora, which we'll probably get into in a bit. And I can just imagine there were points in time where things were really bad when they were kids. And Cora was just like, don't worry, you're special. I think he's internalized that to a point where he really believes he's special. And you know, to an extent, he is special.
And
he
kind of is.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's one of the best Dutch football players on the planet right now. He's one of the better football players in Europe. In like one section of his life, he is one of the 0.00001%, in terms of special. The really interesting thing is when he tries to put that into other things. So when he's constantly talking about, why can't I be a great rapper? And you're like, oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Or he talks about, why can't I be a fashion guy? And you're like, oh, buddy. And he's like, why can't I be an inspiration to this person? Or it's like, here's a rap I did. Here's an important tweet I did once. And you're like,
why can't I get into film? I could do a film about my life and I could play myself.
Yeah.
Which is great. And I cannot knock this guy. I can't knock this guy too much. The way I described it was...
You have to knock him a little bit for us, please.
I would say if one of my best mates went, oh, I've started seeing someone, it's Memphis, I go, oh, no, honey, no.
Okay.
But if one of my, my brother or one of my friends went, oh, I'm playing, Halo, and in my fire squad right now is Memphis. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll play Xbox in Memphis. I'll have a great time.
No one whose books we've read so far has asked us to play Halo with them yet. But it's a different way of starting the book. It was interesting. It was probably one of the better bits of parts of the book, I'd say, in general. And there is a bit in the first chapter where he gets hit in the groin playing football. So everything you could want, really. In terms of the way he breaks up the book, there's two very interesting ways he does it. One, pictures of his tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. He's certainly got a lot of tattoos. I would say that. What did you guys think about that? Seeing all those pictures of Memphis's body every five pages.
Again, this is the thing where like you can see the ideas, and you can see Memphis is really clearly one of ideas. And I can imagine the pitching process of this book. So I can imagine they more or less did the trip to Ghana. And then the first chapter was sent off to the book agent. And the book agent went, yeah, good, just do that. Because the first chapter in the garden is really good. And then someone went, yeah. And then every single chapter is framed about his tattoos and what the tattoos mean to him. Because that's a good sort of air quotes content idea and framing device.
Definitely.
And then you read the chapters and it's applicable. The tattoos are applicable in maybe three chapters.
Yeah. They don't really come back. You made me think of something else. Sorry to bring up The Simpsons again, but it's a bit like when Homer designs that car and he goes, it has to have this, it has to have that, it has to do all these things because it's terrible in the end. It has to have tattoos. It has to have me rapping. I have to go to Ghana. Yeah, there is a lot of stuff in the broth that is this book. But anyone have a favourite tattoo he's got?
I mean, the cartoon tattoos are all wonderful and baffling. They are. Hang on. So, what have we got? We mentioned there's Jigglypuff, obviously.
Yeah. Simba.
Yeah. Aku Aku from Crash Bandicoot.
Yep. Which one is Aku Aku? The guy.
Is the mask.
It's the good mask.
Yeah. The good mask. Yeah. Not the evil mask.
Marvin the Martian.
Marvin the Martian. Yeah.
Which is like the guy watches loads of cartoons, and I can talk to Memphis about cartoons. And this is the thing about why I think Memphis is fun.
Rafiki, yeah. Rafiki's there. Yeah, we forgot about Rafiki.
There's also Iron Man. Which is
why that doesn't fit. Like those that the other ones sort of work in the same universe. Iron Man. I don't know. That doesn't work for me personally.
Okay.
This is the thing about Memphis where he's got a lot of money and he wants to be a designer and he's like, oh yeah, I'm a man of like fine taste. And then they'll declare things he's done and you're going, really? So he's got
an interesting juxtaposition there.
He's got like a massive painting of a scene from American Gangster.
Oh my god!
In his living room, he's like, yeah, American Gangster is my favorite film, and it's like it's Denzel Washington. And you're like, it's not Denzel Washington's best film. It's not. I forget who directed the film, but I'm pretty sure the guy who did has directed far better films. It's not Jay-Z's best album. Like you've.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's not like a scene, like a photo, like a stylistic photo. It is a painting
painted a scene.
Yeah.
I think he said he wishes he painted it himself, but that's about the one thing he says that he can't quite do justice for. He says, like, I could be a rapper, I could be an actor, but I couldn't paint American Gangster.
He seems to imply the nice sweetness
of Memphis.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a huge amount of ambition. He sort of implies that he could in the future.
Yeah,
like if he just put it to it.
I'll get working.
I could probably.
He is only 24.
I know.
So, you know.
Wait until he's painted a few American Gangster scenes. Then write the book. But the cartoons kind of make sense because he liked cartoons when he was a kid, I think, or he watched that when he was having a difficult childhood. He'd go resort and sit down and watch.
That bit is really interesting. It is really sweet because he'll be like, okay, so this is my way of escape, was going to cartoons because I was living in this horrible house and this horrible like stepfather that he was with was awful. But it is sort of the juxtaposition is still quite odd where you're like, here is an incredibly moving scene about my life and here's Iron Man, Aku Aku, Jigglypuff. Like, it's sort of hard to be like, ah, yes, this is my, these are my devastation tattoos. Here is a picture of Rafiki. Like,
oh, it's sweet though.
That's the thing. In its core, there is an inherent sweetness that is really, really, and it's a bit like what Carl's saying. This idea of like, it's really, really sweet and really, really moving, but it's like 5 degrees and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And
yes.
It seems so mean to laugh at him for it, but it's also so funny.
Yeah.
But he has a heart of gold in it, and so you sort of by the end you are won over by him because of how weird and eccentric he is, but it's sort of, you know, his heart's very much in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
throughout this book.
I think in the notes I went, this guy is dumb as a bag of rocks, but he's dumb as a bag of rocks. But I'm rooting for him so much, and I'm rooting for him so much, and if anyone insults him, I'm like, no, you leave him alone.
Yeah, okay. Dang it.
We'll be very much on guard then throughout the rest of the episode.
There is a thin line.
But we liked the tattoo section. Other thing he does a lot is he writes little interludes, which are like voiceovers, effectively, which kind of pop up. And he asks some important questions in them and about how we should judge our lives and, you know, big philosophical questions. Carl, can I ask you some of the questions he asks himself, please?
Sure, go ahead.
Carl, the conditions you're creating in your life, are they good for you?
Yes.
Okay. Very, very, very
concise.
Firm answer. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Sure, very sure about that. The choices that you make, the goals you pursue, the friends you hang out with, are these the people that who inspire you, or are they the type who think it's cool to hang out on the sofa with drinks and drugs until 6 in the morning? A bit more specific, that one, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. This is the really fun thing about Memphis's book, where he's trying to ask these deep, thought-provoking questions, but I'm going, Memphis, I'm like nearly 30. I got back pain. he talks loads about his mental coach and this gentle Jules.
Yeah.
Juice.
Stephen. My apologies. Who more or less saves his life, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a time where he's doing okay in football, but he's basically in the equivalent of a PRU or a SEN school in the Netherlands. He's not really paying attention to school. And this person, Juice, is really, really important. And very clearly has got Memphis to work out a very difficult childhood and how to sort of order his life.
Yeah.
And it's interesting seeing Memphis try and take those questions and ask them of the reader. Really fun thing with Memphis, where he's unique in some things that he doesn't quite understand he's unique in, and then he thinks he's unique in some things that he's very ordinary in.
I hadn't thought about that, Carl. The fact that you say these questions that Memphis puts to the reader and now I'm putting to you. You think that he's just taken them from Eust, effectively? They're things that Eust has said to him before and now he's...
No, I think they're just very common questions that psychologists and or people of the church will constantly ask, right?
Okay.
Like, have you ever had ever been cornered in a party and gone, oh, you've read How to Make Friends and Influence People? Because they're doing all of those notes, you know, I see. You're using my name, you're touching me, you're trying to, get on with it. And I think there are points in this book where I'm reading Memphis, I'm going, oh, I see, Memphis, I know exactly what church and exactly what YouTube video and sermon you've listened to. And that's why you're asking me these questions.
It's TD Jakes.
I listened to a couple of sermons on YouTube. The man is a very good conversationalist. I can see why. Finds it appealing.
He's the guy who wants to baptize him, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And he will. And this is the thing about Memphis.
Yeah, right? He'll get what he wants.
He might have already done it for all we know.
It's probably on Instagram somewhere, if you go back far enough. Yeah.
And I don't think it's not like he'll get what he wants in terms of, like, he's greedy, but just he's driven. Like,
yeah.
Fair play to him. Throughout the book, it's consistent. He's a gym rat. He's always in the gym and he's always working out. He might be late for training, but he always trains, even if he's disagreeing with people.
You know why? It's because he's an Aquarius.
Oh, no.
Oh.
No. Hey, don't tell her. Don't tell him more. Carl, don't encourage Natasha talking about star signs on the show.
Carl, I reckon you're an Aries.
I am indeed.
How does she do that?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Amy never used to do that. Anyway. Talking about, we mentioned Juiced a little bit before. I mean, the guy is a saint. I think we should have a little appreciation section for him.
Yeah.
Because there's a bit where Juiced says, I was in the middle of a guest lecture at the Dutch National Sports Training Institute. Memphis was crying when he called. I cut the lesson short and drove off to Eindhoven at top speed. He does that over and over again. Throughout the whole thing, he's a really, really good friend. I wish I had a Juiced in my life.
It's like a fairy godmother, isn't he?
Yeah,
like a little, much. Like a fairly odd parent on his shoulder.
And he's a really nice. He's there, you know. He's there to this day, or at least in the book. He disappears a little bit during the Man United era, but then the rest of it, he's a very important figure in his life.
Which you could argue is why the Manchester United.
Yeah, Which I think is really cool, and it's also really interesting when it goes to Juiced's perspective, and Juiced goes, "Yeah, there are some times where I am just going to let the car crash." And there are other times where I'm going to pull him in because I can't let him do that sort of stuff. There's a great segment where they talk about Memphis is getting loads of money. And he's like, yeah. And then Memphis wants to buy a new kitchen. And if I let him buy everything he wanted for the kitchen, he'd have bought this really expensive kitchen. But I told him, don't buy a new kitchen. Now, it's nice having a parental type figure. Like, no, don't spend all your money on
a lot of the books that we read, they have wives that fulfill that role because they're older and they're telling it back. But in this... Mm. They have that relationship, which is quite nice.
Juiced is his wife.
Juiced is
Spoiler.
Very quickly, can I talk about the kitchen bit?
Good. What an incredible extravagance that is. Like, usually people are talking about buying cars and stuff. He's buying, you know, a big cooker.
He was talking about buying a big cooker, and then they say, like, oh, we went to a small chain store instead. And Memphis was really annoyed at first to go to, like, a Wix going, I hate everything here. And then eventually Juice being like, look, there's an Arga. Do you like it, Memphis?
Do you think own brand Arga?
I want an Arga.
We know from Maya Yoshida's book that Dutch stores aren't very good at fulfilling orders on time. So hopefully that kitchen turned up.
This is why I wonder how quickly it went ahead and whether Maya Shreely was reading this book being like, where what? Did you go? How did you do this?
This is funny because there's a bit where because this book has a really massively jumping timeline for reasons. There's a bit where Memphis goes, yeah, when I was 14, I did home ec because there were lots of girls in the course. Mm. Yeah. And then it jumps forward to when he's at Manchester United. He's like, oh yeah, I can't cook. Like, well, like, you said you did home ec. You said you did home ec and learned about food tech and learned about, you know, how to put a home up because you wanted to hook up with girls. And yet later on you say you don't know how to cook. So were you just like kissing throughout? Or... I mean, he probably was. Cool. Memphis is a very handsome man. So.
Mm, he is a handsome boy.
Didn't he learn how to paint nails? That was the big thing he said throughout the book. Which is like, is that what you do in home ec?
He's got quite a few like handyman skills. But also, I don't know if you asked him to recall any of them, if you could do it. And like, he's used linoleum knives and helped fit kitchens himself. And like definitely has done cooking lessons. But I don't know if you went, hey, can you bleed a radiator? He'd be able to do it. There's a great bit where he says, when I was at PSV, I did 200 abdominal crunches every day. For two reasons. And he goes, for two reasons. One, because it'd make me a better football player. And two, if I had a good body, I'd be able to get more endorsement deals. It's that great, like, Memphis thinks about stuff in ways I just cannot.
That's true.
I would do like two crunches and then be like, I can never do this again, obviously. Yeah.
That's Memphis, and that's why Memphis is, I don't want to say an idiot savant, but
that's why
this book is fascinating in a way that it shouldn't be fascinating.
Guys, it's time for Ken Zong.
Ken Zong!
Yeah! So, Carl, Ken writes chants about old footballers. First of all, I have a note from Ken. It says, please, please, please don't make me write any more Wigan chants. I've spent so long trying to fit Julius Agahauer into looking back over my shoulder. I fear I'm going to wake up one morning on the DW centre circle and I've repeatedly painted all assists and no goals make Emil Heskey a dull boy across the pitch. Please. So instead, Ken just wants to write songs about random players. You okay with that, Jack?
I think Ken owes an apology to the entirety of Wigan.
I do think you're right, and I think he will do that. But before he does that, let's hold fire until we hear what chant he's come up with.
Fair enough.
This is the tune of Maniac by Michael Cimbello from Flashdance. He's a maniac, maniac when he scores. And his name is Gabriella Bonlahor.
Okay, you can do any player you like.
You can do whatever you want, Ken.
Anyone you want.
Free pass. Let's talk about his mother, because Cora is incredibly important. I know you have a lot of strong feelings on Cora, Carl.
She's an angel.
She is.
Oh my God, there is a page, well, very early on in one of the pages, I've just underlined it with in all caps, Cora, no! Because you can see the relationship of Memphis and Cora. They're very, very close with each other. Cora had Memphis quite young, relatively. So there's like a really nice, segment in the middle of the book where there are loads of photographs of Memphis's childhood and life. And there's one with like adult Memphis next to his mum as Memphis picks up an award. And you're like, ah. But yeah, Cora's had it hard because what was really quite nice is the book every now and again will switch perspective to Memphis's mother.
Mm.
And not only will it describe Cora being so happy and proud of her son, but also it will describe Cora talking about her love life and her mistakes, because Memphis's dad is not particularly nice. Mm. And that's like the first. That's like enough drama for one lifetime, really. Mm-hmm. And there's one segment where Memphis says one of his tattoos is basically like all he left was blood when his dad left and like punched an aquarium.
Punching aquarium bit is so odd again.
Yeah, I forgot
about that, and this is the thing of that's and this isn't funny, but the use of the word aquarium.
No, yes, yeah. Objectively saying he punched an aquarium is funny. But then, like, you actually think about it, and it's like, it's devastating, and that's enough for one
lifetime and one childhood. And then there's a bit later on where Memphis and Cora move somewhere else, and the next door neighbors, it's a man with a number of children that aren't doing very well. And then Cora starts going over every now and again, and then falls in love with the man. And that's when I go, Cora, no.
Yeah.
That was so sad.
And it's really sad because Memphis moves in with this very dysfunctional household, and Cora is very much wanting to help all these young people in the household. And like Memphis isn't getting on with his stepfather or his stepbrothers, and it's really painful. And this is where I think, this is why I can't really be like, Memphis is an idiot and he's a bad egg. Because
for sure.
If you went to Memphis, what's your goal in life? Yeah, there's a bit where he goes, I want to play for Real Madrid. I want to have 100 million in my bank account. I want to win a Ballon d'Or. But I think if you really went to Memphis, what's the point of what you're doing? You go, I want to make mum proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's very true.
Yeah.
Like I'll get really happy near the end when, you know, there's another segment in the chapter and I'm like, I don't understand what perspective this is. And then it slowly reveals this is Cora at a music festival and she falls in love again.
Yeah,
and I'm like, yes!
Raymond! Yes! Lovely Raymond!
Raymond, Raymond, who is, if anything, is the biggest poet in the whole book. There's a bit, there's a bit where he says, if I'd spread all Cora's tears over the farmyard, all the grass here would be lush and green. Oh.
Beautiful. Weird.
Weird, but that's a beautiful thing to say, Ray Raymond.
It is. And there's,
finally, there's like, Cora's got some, you know, love being spread around their farmyard, which is nice.
And there's such a nice, and again, there's a really nice bit where Raymond meets Memphis for the first time. Memphis is like 17, and so there's this really nice bit where Cora's like, oh my God, I'm so nervous that Memphis is going to meet my new boyfriend. And Memphis, I think Memphis has an arm wrestle with him and he wins because he's elite level athlete.
Because he's done 200 ab crunches.
Yeah, right? And again, this is like the very funny, sweet tragicness of it. It's like, he has an arm wrestle with his mum's third boyfriend and then goes, you know what? I like you. You can stay. And
that's
then,
so nice.
Which is, it's that sort of dumb. Why are you having an arm wrestle with this guy? But also, you need to because you're Memphis.
Cora is great. And she's very devoted. There is one moment, though, where it kind of plays in with the religious side of things, but also incredibly vivid description of Memphis Depay being born. When Memphis was born, there was a gush of amniotic fluid, Cora said. I felt like my waters were a reference to the Memphis rivers in Egypt and Tennessee, which Memphis was named after. Dennis immediately lifted Memphis into the air. The umbilical cord was still attached and shouted on a high, "You're a star, and you'll be an even bigger star."
I like how you've done that because it's like an agent saying, "You're a star, kid. Yeah, you'll be an even bigger star. Let me tell you."
I can't remember who Dennis was, but that is. I imagine that probably was the case. incredibly vivid. But also, I think she should get a new GP in general because when he's doing the scan for her baby, he says Cora would either have twins or an extremely strong child. I don't know how easy it is to mix those two things up. But
sorry, I thought you were having twins, but you've got a very strong baby.
It's just an extremely strong baby. It's not two baby. People at
Maybe
all.
Maybe he's one of those twins that like ate the other one.
Oh, possibly.
Yeah,
that'd that be quite happens sometimes, doesn't it?
He was probably thinking, for my endorsement deal, I can't have a twin because that will freak people out. So I better make sure I eat my twin in the womb.
He was thinking for a very long time. Does anyone have an out of context Memphis Depay?
Yes.
Carl, yes. As the guest, please, we'd love to hear yours first.
It's like one of my favourite openings to a tattoo segment where he describes his pectoral tattoo, which just says Dream Chaser. And he goes, I was chasing my dreams and I wanted everyone to know at the time. And that's why I got Dream Chaser tattooed on my chest. Again, the man is...
Can't argue with that logic.
Near devoid of self-awareness or subtlety.
That is a very good choice. Anyone else got an out of context quote?
I got one. I'd started eating trash again. This time from two different bins.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
What? Is that a metaphor?
I can't ask.
That one, I was trying to look for context. I thought it was a metaphor, and then I read it several times and couldn't find any reference to bins or any reference. It's not.
Yeah, I don't remember that bit. Are you sure that's from the same book?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this was.
That's off Andy Gray's Shades of Grey.
It is Randy Gray's Shades of Grey.
Okay.
When he's barefoot running about Birmingham.
Tash, did you have one? A context quote?
Yeah, mine was about amniotic fluid, and you ruined it.
You
know I like talking about vaginas on this podcast.
There's plenty of time for amniotic fluid later.
Oh, Tash, we have company.
Yeah. Come on, Tash. Best behaviour. We've been speaking for an hour and we haven't mentioned football yet.
But why do we need to? This is what this book is like, though. It's just a baffling ordeal of unrelated football things.
And in fairness, there's not loads of football in it, to be honest. He doesn't really get to football until about three quarters of the way into the book when he starts taking his... he's at Sparta Rotterdam, isn't he, I think, at first? Then he goes to PSV. Yeah.
It's almost as if he hasn't had much of a football career.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's crazy.
I do feel for him, though, like a lot of the books that we read football for them is their entire life, whereas to him, football is the conduit that he gets all the things that he loves in life.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a fair way of looking at
it. Football is giving him a platform to be a rapper.
Yeah, yeah. He happens to be good at football, but...
He wants to be a rapper. Yeah. Yeah. He happens to be good at football, but he wants to...
I didn't realise that was a way in. I didn't know that was a way in.
Be a hat wearer?
Yeah.
Only a famous hat wearer.
Should we talk about the hat?
Yes, we have to.
The most dramatic part of the book. Again, we've been speaking for football for about 10 seconds, but it's hard to do a dramatic reading because, as we mentioned, the book just... This story goes on for about 7 chapters, kind of different parts of it all the way through. But this dramatic reading is called Memphis Depay Wears a Hat. I'll read the beginning of it. Feel free to interject whenever you like. On the top floor of his house in Écully, a village to the west of Lyon, France. Memphis.
You okay?
Memphis is standing in front of a rack of hats. He shakes his head, sighing. Even now, he can't understand how a hat can cause such a huge fuss. It went on for days in newspapers, on talk shows, and social media. The gist of it was: if you wear a hat when you arrive at the Dutch national team's hotel, you're asking for trouble.
Is that true?
Yes.
Carl has inside right. knowledge.
There are so many. Imagine having to explain to Memphis that actions have consequences.
Yes.
I can imagine Juice must have had 3 or 4 times like, no, people can see you and what you do has consequences. So there are tiny bits where, you know, there's a bit where it goes, where all these friends are going, maybe you shouldn't buy a Rolls Royce when you're playing for Man United because everyone's watching you. And he's like, nah, you know. The English press's problem for just looking at me all the time. Let me just live my life. And then we're like, no, maybe keep a low profile.
That's a very good point. And I mean, a hat's not quite as showy-offy as a Rolls Royce, I wouldn't say.
This is the thing in Memphis where you can draw added attention to yourself. So he is of the opinion that because I'm a footballer, I'm always going to have attention screw the haters. Fine, good. But also there are things you can do to make things worse. I think he doesn't quite grasp that. So we know for a fact when he was at Manchester United, Wayne Rooney took him aside 2 or 3 times and went, you know, when you're playing on 23 games or you're playing youth games because you're not in the first team, just take it easy, like keep a low profile, wear your club stuff and wear a regular car. And then Memphis will turn up in 250,000 Rolls Royce. And Rooney's just going, oh, mate. and this is the thing where like you can imagine there are so many times when Memphis is doing stuff and you're going, oh, mate. In that exact cadence.
Yeah.
And he constantly brings up Cristiano Ronaldo, which I think is quite interesting. Yeah. He goes, you wouldn't stop Cristiano Ronaldo from doing this. Like, Cristiano Ronaldo not only does 200 crunches every single day, but does his activation training and has won a Champions League and has won another Champions League and has won another Champions League and has won a Euros. You are 24.
That's true. And I've never seen Ronaldo in a hat anyway that I can think of. Anyone remember? Yeah. I can't remember Ronaldo in a hat.
No, but it's the thing. Like, and this is what I found really interesting because Memphis loves Ronaldo and clearly wants to like get Ronaldo and like had the big moment where he wore the number 7 shirt at United, which Ronaldo wore. And he's talking to Wayne Rooney, right? Mm. The guy who was also really good at his football and saw Ronaldo and went, you know what? I'm going to play on the left so Ronaldo can do more stuff.
Sure.
And
like,
saw Ronaldo up close and saw Ronaldo do the press-ups, do all the hard work, turn up from bad teeth and flared jeans and doing too many step-overs and like turned himself into this hardened machine and goes to Memphis. Mate, love what you're doing. Love the fact you're doing all those crunches. Very clear you work hard in training. Just don't turn up in a car and you'll be sorted. And Memphis goes, nah.
I gotta.
And it's so close.
Yeah.
Do you think if he hadn't turned up in a Rolls Royce, he would have been a success at United, though?
One thing that's very clear is, I mean, as talking about football journalists, Memphis was just done by an injury to Luke Shaw, which, tactically speaking, Luke Shaw getting injured made his United career harder because there was a really important partnership there. And then Van Gaal is a very deeply esoteric man. He once got out his testicles in front of Bayern Munich as part of a team talk. Bear in mind, at the same time, Memphis and Van Gaal at Manchester United, someone pulled Mario Fellaini's hair. And then in the press conference afterwards, Van Gaal went, you should only pull hair in sex masochism.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Van Gaal's weird. Van Gaal's weird.
He's a strange guy. He loved Van Gaal at first, though. He loves Van Gaal in Holland.
And this is another weird thing where, like, Memphis very clearly meets people on the first instance and they get on with him, and then maybe on two or three they don't, and Memphis doesn't understand why. He's like, I was friends with Van Persie before and now he's calling me a dickhead. What happened? I'm like, Memphis, maybe something you said or did, your actions have consequences. And he just can't understand that if you want to have a low profile and you want to be liked, you maybe shouldn't turn up in a very expensive hat or Louis Vuitton trainers with wings on them.
But sticking to the hat. Let's stick to the hat for the second, if that's okay.
Yes.
We get a description of the hat. He says, look at it. Here's the evidence of my crime. Memphis says cynically, taking a brown hat from the rack. Nothing too showy about a brown hat, is there? I can't imagine it being too. He says at one point he wants to wear a sombrero. So I feel like that would have been worse. If he turned up wearing a sombrero, oh my gosh.
There would be different problems if you turn up wearing a sombrero. Yeah, like, it doesn't matter how. Also, do Louis Vuitton do sombreros?
Yeah, I'm not
You'll
sure.
You'll find a way.
Yeah.
What I really like is he goes, it's quite a restrained specimen in comparison to the rest of their collection. There are dozens of hats hanging in here in all shapes, sizes, and colours. Memphis puts on the brown hat and looks himself in the mirror. People got so worked up about this. It's a nice hat, even though it's a bit boring for my life.
Yeah.
And then you turn the page, and you're like, okay, this is kind of surreal, and like you've raised a very good point. You wore something expressive, and people criticize you for not being professional, despite the fact there are bigger issues in the team. Good, fine, good point. You turn the page. Back in the living room, Memphis picks up his iPhone. I've written some lyrics about it. It's still very rough, but this is what I've got so far. And is that sort of... You've written a rap song.
No.
About the time the media criticised you for wearing a hat.
And what a rap song as well.
We could have a dramatic rap instead of a dramatic reading.
No one's done this.
I'm not doing that.
I'm quite happy to read the lyrics. What's nice of people
under dramatic music?
I don't know how this will go to our dramatic music, but I'll give it a go. What's nice of people like me and you, we're all the same through and through, but I get more crap thrown at me because I bring it all on myself. Half the country call me arrogant because I showed up with a hat on. That's fucked up. Things ain't what they used to be. I did it my way is what Frank Sinatra would say if he was wearing a hat. Which is a really strange sentence to end the rap on. If he was wearing a hat.
I mean, you could argue that the first part of the rap is fine. It's okay. Yeah. The end is like a comedy. It's like you would end a comedy song that way.
If he was wearing a hat.
If he was wearing a hat, this would make sense. Yeah.
I haven't listened to any of it. Has anyone listened to his raps?
Yeah, yes. I've listened to quite a lot of them.
Any good?
No.
You're not a fan.
In terms of the canon of footballers rapping,
it's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's one of the best footballers I've ever heard rap.
Better than Andy Cole?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, he has dedicated beats. He knows how modern rap sounds, and he can approximate that quite well. But he wants. I've never heard a Memphis song on. That's a rapper. I've gone. That's a footballer trying to rap.
Surely you haven't heard Gazza's Geordie rap, have you? Then I'm guessing. If you're saying that Memphis is one of the best rappers of all time, please listen to Paul Gascoigne's canon of work.
I've listened to so many of these rap songs.
Who's the worst football rapper?
Zlatan.
Is he a rapper?
He tried to do a Kanye verse last time when I interviewed him, and he was terrible.
Really? What did he try and rap?
I asked him. It was the week that Kanye had said that he was God, and I asked Zlatan who would win, and he went, He can't play football, but I can rap. I was like, go on then. So he tried to do some, and it was not good.
Oh, dear. Why did you say go on then? Why would you do that?
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Come on. Yeah,
no, I think at that point, Tash, you say, this interview is over.
No. If Ibra wants to be ridiculous, you push him to be more ridiculous.
Exactly. Do you know what is really cute, though, that I realised? So since this book came out, he has released a new song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2 Corinthians 5:7. So I had a look what that actually is in the Bible. And it harks back to chapter 1 because it's "For we live by faith, not sight." And he donated the money to the blind children.
Okay.
This is, like, so I can't slag off this song because He's doing it for noble reasons. It's just crap.
There is an internal logic to everything Memphis does, even if you don't realize it, or even if the order of that internal logic doesn't make sense. So Memphis now has a popular celebration where he sticks his fingers in his ears.
Yep.
And he's been doing it for basically since he left Manchester United. He did it at Lyon. He did it there. And now he talks as if the celebration with these fingers in his ears is in support of his charity. But the charity came after the celebration. So the celebration was initially, I don't want to listen to the haters.
Yeah.
And then as he got more and more into his Christian faith, and someone said, right, you can start to give back, he came up, you know, why don't you go back home to Ghana and help those in need? And then I think you can almost see him look at something and go, hey, well, this is how I celebrate. And I could help those people. And you can almost see him go like, I'm a genius. And also, that is mad clever.
Yeah.
It's mad. It's so clever. It's right. clever now to be like, why do you have a celebration?
It feels clever, but it also feels a little bit gross. I don't know. Like, it's sort of like doing that to symbol, like putting your fingers in your ears to symbolize like being deaf. I don't know. It just sort of seems a bit like, I don't know. It may be
a bit ham-fisted, but
it's also the logo of his clothing line that's about to come out as well. Because that is Memphis the Pie. That is the oddity of Memphis the Pie, about how you can at the same time of being incredibly altruistic and really helpful and trying to do good, he can also come across as quite crass.
But again, I think the heart's in the right place. That's good.
Yeah, I can't knock the kid.
You,
I want him.
You don't have to.
I finished reading this, going, I'd have you back at United, mate.
do you really think that nowadays? Do you honestly think you would have Memphis back? Because when Memphis was there before, he was very poor for United. He scored twice really early on, I seem to remember, in the Champions League, and then disappeared off the radar basically for a year and a half. Would you really want him back?
Yeah, I think he's nice. I just think he's neat.
I think that's the way to go, though, with football. Like, I'm often like, I just want people who I like to play for my team. That is what I like. And I mean, you can't talk. You got Jose Mourinho as manager.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I've thought that for many years, and now I'm realizing it hasn't got me anywhere, liking players. So now I'm very much
like a mercenary suddenly saying, oh, what do you give me? What do you
bring on anyone,
Memphis?
I'll take anyone at Spurs as long as we win something. Actually, that's the point. The bit where I went off the book halfway through, Memphis Depay writes, Tottenham's a great club, but it's not absolutely top notch. So that's when Memphis died to me at that moment. That's interesting you say that you'd have him back at United. I know he's obviously been linked with Barcelona recently, and he's been a very different player since he's been at Lyon. He's much more kind of, Carl, am I right in thinking he's very much plays centre forward for Lyon as opposed to playing off the wing anywhere like that.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a different position to what he played at Man United, so maybe it fits the knees better.
He's very, but again, this is the really cool, really fun thing where in the book, his conversion from a winger into a forward is described as some sort of great triumph, as sort of the manager has finally understood, if you build your team around Memphis Depay, you will flourish. Whereas for like tactical reasons, he's not that good defending. And in the modern game, if you want to play wide, you have to track back.
Yes.
Which is that sort of Memphisness.
Yeah.
Memphis writes about everything from a position of strength. So everything good that happens to Memphis is because he's good. And everything bad that happens to Memphis happens for bad reasons or because people don't understand him. Mm. So like Memphis moving up front for Lyon and for the Netherlands has saved his career. Well, it's like taking his career to another notch because he's not very good at one thing. So if someone's gone, you've got a weakness, I'm going to move you there rather than you're really good at this, I'm going to make you do this. Which I think, you know, when Memphis redoes this book when he's 30, I mean, I'll definitely read the book when he redoes it.
We're buying this again when he does this book.
Yeah, because like, he...
As long as he's nicer about Spurs. Oh,
there is like, there is clearly like another layer of learning he's about to meet. I want to read the book where Memphis wins a major title in one of the top five leagues. I want to read the book where Memphis gets married. I want to read the book where Memphis has a child. Mm. I want to read the book if the Netherlands win something, because there is even though he's 24, he's 15.
Yeah,
yeah,
and he'll forever be 15.
He might be. He's a good boy.
He is.
He's a lovely good boy.
That's a very nice way of summing it up, I think, Carl. Maybe you'll get that move to Barcelona at some point. That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
You never know, Memphis. That's the fun thing.
That's true. Yeah. Anything could happen.
Maybe he'll turn up at Port Vale.
Yeah, every chance. Him and Tom Pope up front would be a pretty lethal strike partnership.
I don't know. Are you really going to move Tom Pope wide for him?
Did this book change you? Just quickly. Tash, what did you think?
I never thought I'd read a book that went from A Child Called It to Patrick Bateman to Kim Kardashian, but I did, and I loved it.
Great. Jack?
Yeah, I think it'll stay with me forever.
Okay.
I don't think I'll ever be able to stop thinking about it.
I mean, Carl, you enjoyed the book, I think.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it. I've quoted it 2 or 3 times on Twitter since.
That's good. To me, it was a little bit like judging the Bible. It's a hard thing to kind of judge. It's such a pure story the whole way through it. And
you must have made Memphis very happy with it.
I hope so.
We're trying to get him on the podcast next week.
We're going to read the Bible with him. Carl, what would you give it out of 10?
6 going into a 7.
Yeah, we could do 6.5.
It's quite short. It's 250 pages long. You can read it in an afternoon.
Yep.
It's unintentionally funny. you do feel for everyone involved in the book, and at the end I've finished it going, yeah, I want this guy to do well. So
nice. So say 6.5. Call it that.
Yeah.
6.5.
Yeah,
yeah. Tash, how about you?
I'm gonna go a 7 because I feel our scale is slightly different because we've read so many crap ones. For me, this was up there.
Yeah. I'm also going to go for a 7 because I didn't know what to make of it half the time. It really is a roller coaster, but it's going to stick with me. So, yeah, 7. Jack?
I'm going to go 6.
Okay.
Only because I think I love having read it, but I didn't enjoy reading it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I find it's quite a baffling book. It's quite hard to read.
Yeah, I think you're right. So that gives it 6.5, roughly, just over 6.5.
Okay.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what Carl rated it. So Carl is the mean scorer. For this week's quiz, you're all named after important people in shaping who Memphis became today. Carl, you're Bishop T.D. Jakes. Tash, you're our Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ. And Jack, you're Dick Advocat.
Okay. Oh, man.
Okay, question one. What video game character does Memphis have a tattoo of? Apart from
Dick Advocat.
Apart from the Crash Bandicoot one. French video game character.
Dick Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ.
Dick Advocat got in there just before you, Jesus. Sorry. Yep.
Rayman?
Rayman is correct.
He's got a Rayman tattoo?
He's got a Rayman tattoo. He does. 1 point to Dick Advocat. Come on, keep up, Jesus. Question number two. Where did Memphis's dad work?
Bishop T.J.X.
Yes, Bishop.
A caramel waffle factory.
Very good. Very
and
good.
That is such a stereotypically Dutch thing that it seems... ludicrous.
Question number three. What footballer does a young Memphis get his photo taken with?
And he treasures Dick Advocat.
Yes.
Pierre Van Hooydonk.
Very good. Very good. That is the correct answer.
Because he turned up in a helicopter, and I remember thinking that in Feyenoord, and so did Jerzy Dudek, and I remember thinking, is that how they transport all in Feyenoord, just via helicopter?
Well, to Dick Advocat, you've done very well on that. I'm going to end it with a quick game of real rap, fake rap. So I'm going to tell you some lines. You got to tell me if this is a real rap by Memphis Depay or not.
Oh boy,
Carl, you look. I don't know if you're like terrified of this or.
No, I'm terrified.
Okay, cool. That's good. Question number one. Seems like everybody's wishing for the same shit. They want a rollie in a chain. Oh yeah.
Oh, Bishop T.D. Jakes. That's real.
That is real. From Feelings by Memphis. Question two. I ain't falling for that trick. Think I'll pass like Michael Carrick.
Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Yep.
Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Yep, Bishop.
I'm going to say it's fake, yeah. Although that's nice. Nice, right?
That's a nice, yeah.
Thank you very much. That's a little rap called Michael Carrick by James Bug. Number three. I know you got diamonds. They're shining, but I'm not impressed by the diamonds. Impressed by the Christmas gift I got from Brian.
Oh, Dick Advocat.
Yep.
That is a real rap because he mentioned
no, it's
Brian.
Not.
Who is Brian? It is real.
And
yeah.
that is
no.
The thing that's been stuck in my head. Like, who is Brian?
Yeah.
Why is Brian in this bit of the rap?
Why is he getting presents?
Well,
that is from,
I never.
That's from No Love by Memphis Depay. Question four. Are you in trouble? Homie, you betcha. I'll take a mother down like Darren Fletcher.
You had too much fun with these. I'm not playing this game.
I was very, very bored last night.
Bishop TJ Jakes says that's fake.
Is correct, Bishop.
What, you don't think Memphis Depay quotes Darren Fletcher all the time?
I'm not even sure if they crossed over at United. And finally, I will go down with this ship. I won't put my hands up and surrender.
That's Dido, Jesus says.
Wow, nice.
Very good.
It's Dido.
That is White Flag by Dido.
White Flag.
At the end of that, I think it was a tie between Bishop TD Jakes and Dick Advocat. I think overall.
Yes,
The rivalry that never dies. Bishop TD Jakes versus Dick Advocat.
Thank you so much, Carl, for coming on. Did you have a great time?
I had a great time.
We loved you.
You've earned more
as
claps.
As long as you keep bringing books that are under 300 pages, I'll definitely come back.
So you won't be reading Jason McAteer's epic with us? Okay. Yeah.
No. Absolutely not.
Thank you. You're welcome back anytime. Anyone's any thoughts on the book, message us reviews. Follow us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram. Review the podcast. Subscribe. Follow us. Any last words, anyone?
Yes, it's this segment from Memphis on page 77.
Wow.
Where he says, sometimes I don't think, I just do. You see it on the pitch. Who shoots for goal from the midfield line? I just do it without thinking twice.
Beautiful. And on that note, thank you very much, Bishop TD Jakes. we'll see you all soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Daniels, and Carl Anker. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Memphis for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Memphis is still very much a footballer and very much only 26 years old. He did, however, teach himself how to paint a scene from Scarface in watercolour. Cora and Raymond are happily married and very rarely mention amniotic fluid these days. Eustace is still the world's most patient man and recently stopped Memphis buying a solid gold patio and took him to B&Q instead. The hat is still on Memphis's wall and hasn't been worn since, and Dido hasn't released a song in far too long. Come back, Dido. We'll see you next week for more Football Book Club. Until then, bye-bye.